Welcome to the Fan Pregame, SportsCenter, SportsCenter 590. The Fan, it's the Fan Pregame. Ailish and Jesse Rubinoff filling in for the last time this week. Justin Cuthbert back tomorrow. We've loved having you and we appreciate you.
Thank you,
Jesse.
It's been a pleasure being here.
Well, you know, you still got 60 minutes, so.
Yeah, we'll see.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
See you by the end.
We got a big night. NHL on the network, of course. Detroit and Buffalo playing at 7 o'clock and Vegas and Seattle at 10 o'clock. We're going to talk some NHL expansion to Atlanta. Ooh. Hot topic today. Lots to go through. We got the Rempe mania maybe being over as well. Greg Wyshynski will join us from ESPN in about 5 minutes.
Opening day is just over 2 weeks away in
Major
League Baseball. Isn't that insane?
It did feel like spring today, so I was happy about that. I'm wearing my spring color.
The weather is a whole different story. Like, it's not, I get it's awesome. It's not supposed to be like this on March 12th, right?
I'll take it.
It's a bubble taker. It's okay. Sure. We got some important updates on a number of Blue Jays players, including the most notable, probably Kevin Gausman, through a side session today. And all indications are that it's going well. He's, of course, dealing with shoulder fatigue. We'll catch up with Kevin Barker, co-host of Blair and Barker, at 6:30. He's in Dunedin, and we'll answer all the burning Blue Jays questions ahead of opening day. Like, I can't wait. I know I have some takes that I've had over the summer that I'm not, you know, the team isn't as good as I anticipated.
You're ready to be proven wrong is what you're saying.
But I'm ready to be proven wrong. I'm ready for the season to get underway. Rack up some W's. Let's go.
I love that.
And then I'll be right back on board.
I love that.
It's all good.
PWHL announced today that they're going to take over the Bell Center, looking to break the all-time attendance record, which I got to be in attendance for in Toronto at Scotiabank Arena. Well, this arena holds at least 2,000 people more, so they're looking to do that. We'll get into that a little bit more, and they've got a big weekend ahead, including a takeover of three different NHL arenas.
I feel like this isn't going to end. I feel like the PWHL can go anywhere. Like Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, isn't that in Cowboys Stadium?
They could do that.
So let's go.
On Netflix.
Let's like keep going. 20,000, 30,000, and then we'll get up to 100 eventually for the PWHL. That should be the goal. All right, NFL free agency for the second day in a row has been absolutely insane. Tons of new faces in new places. And if you don't pay attention to the National Football League until your fantasy draft coming up in, I guess, August.
So me.
You're going to have a lot of homework to do. Like, you might have to
Wait, that guy's on what team?
Yeah, you might have to, like, pay for some expertise because it's out of control. There's running backs all over the place in new cities. So we'll talk about that, and we'll also have our best bets a little bit later in the show.
Perfect. I hit mine last night. You
didn't.
We're close.
Didn't. You know what? We almost had to start
the
show
with Raptors.
Like,
okay, we'll talk
fine.
Raptors, but
we almost had to apologize.
No, you. Yeah, we'll get to Raptors.
Okay, fine.
Because there's some moral victories in that one. But before we bring in Greg, let's hit on today's biggest story, which was the idea and the NHL expansion. ASE Group partnered with former NHL and current broadcaster Aaron Carter, releasing a public statement announcing the desire to bring an NHL team back to Atlanta. This is not the first time we've heard this, but it is a new and exciting bid, which we will get into, but not the first ownership group that's expressed interest in expanding this year as well. There's obviously the Utah Jazz, which was back in January, but Atlanta's a hot topic, has been Hotlanta. I don't know your thoughts on NHL expansion, Jesse, so please enlighten me.
Okay, so I just think we have 32 teams, and that to me seems like a pretty good number for the National Hockey League. I actually was opposed. I mean, Vegas has worked out swimmingly, but I was opposed to Seattle and Vegas in the sense that at some point here, you hit, in my opinion, a critical mass where the quality of the National Hockey League diminishes.
I could not agree more.
Because you're watering down the product. And in fact, if you actually wanted to make the product better, you would shrink a little bit and have all the best players playing on the best teams, and that would give you the best product. But ultimately, this is a business. I just wonder, where do we get to if we keep adding in new city, new city, new city, and you start to stretch it a little bit? Like, I don't want the NHL to become the AHL. And it's not there. It's not close to being there. But the more teams you bring into the fold here, you run the risk that the product is not going to be as good. And that's a little bit disappointing to me. The second part of it is going back to a place where hockey failed. I don't understand the insistence. I know that the United States is a place where the NHL views it as a place that they can grow. Makes a lot of sense in that case. But to go back to places where you have already tried the experiment and it did not go well doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense to me. Like, why? Just because it's 20 years later, suddenly
that's what I'm work? And maybe it's because Anson Carter and the group around him have a different approach. And we'll get into that with Greg. But the Atlanta Flames entered the league in, I think it was 72, mm-hmm. stayed there for 8 years. 99, we know the Atlanta Thrashers came, only lasted until 2011. I don't know what's changed other than this pitch seems to have this incredible arena and development idea. Tell me if you've heard that before.
Right.
And an arena and a development complex.
It's like a prerequisite now.
And it is very similar to what they're hoping is successful in Arizona. So it could be just that this group, of, you know, led by somebody that has passion and roots from that area that wants to do something different. But I'm in the same ballpark as you, is that 32 teams already sometimes feels like there's too many teams. And the products are, you know, how many number one goaltenders are there in the league? How many right shot defensemen did we need at this trade deadline? And there's going to be more that you need. There gets to a point where if it's 32, do they have to make it, you know, and they add two more to 34, mm-hmm. do they have to make it 36 then to have balanced divisions? Like there's just the growth.
Great point.
The growth is a lot. Yeah. But I mean, this is something that's probably not going to ever end, is the idea of wanting to add more franchises, wanting to bring more revenue in. But we already see some teams are struggling with that revenue. So help us break it all down is Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Greg, how's it going today? Thanks for jumping on.
Oh, it's going well. Two teams that aren't struggling are Seattle and Vegas. And that's kind of the point, I think, is like they're having such success with these two new you know, expansion cities that, you know, everybody's desirous to add more, because whether it's the expansion rules or just where the sport is right now, those cities are hugely successful.
Yeah, and I think we might be spoiled a little bit by the recent success. You know, one of them won a Stanley Cup. One of them is already a playoff contender, both in markets that have seemed to really embrace it, maybe to a surprise, at least in Vegas. And it's been really awesome to see. So is it a copycat type of situation where you look at the revenue and the championships and looking seemingly super easy for these expansion teams and think, well, Atlanta's already had a blueprint at one point. Maybe this time around, something's different. What is different this time around, Greg?
Oh, there's a ton different. I actually spoke to the mayor of the city where they're trying to put this arena that was in the Anson Carter expansion request today. Mm-hmm. And he told me, you know, the demographics have shifted a lot in Georgia and even in the last decade. The business community is a lot different than it was in the last decade. And so the conditions on the ground in and around Atlanta are a bit different than even when the Thrashers were there. And that's something that Bill Daly, the NHL's deputy commissioner, kind of voiced to ESPN last September when we talked to him about a potential Atlanta expansion bid, talking about, you know, the location of the rink was probably going to be more conducive to fans coming to games, and it's just how the conditions on the ground are different. So, you know, for those of us that are a little bit wary about maybe three strikes and you're out, mm-hmm. more than three times is a charm when it comes to Atlanta, there is a lot of people there and in the NHL that do believe that if they put a team there, it could be a different scenario than it was for the Flames and the Thrashers.
I just wonder, like, I look at corporations around the world, and there's so many corporations that have been ruined by greed over the years. And I wonder, like, at some point, does the product suffer as a result of continuing to introduce new cities? And we obviously spoke about the success that Vegas and Seattle have had recently, and that is a very good point. But I just wonder if you could continue to introduce franchises, and who knows if 33 would end up being the last one. It certainly seems like there's interest from other cities, whether it be in Canada or the United States. I just wonder if we get to a critical mass here where the product is not as good as what fans have become accustomed to. And at that point, you start to wonder, like, well, is it really in the best interest of the National Hockey League to continue to expand in this way?
Well, first, I should give a message to my friends in Canada. If you guys want another team, the best thing that could happen is for a team to go to Atlanta.
Yeah, two for two.
I mean, my God. It's a pipeline from Atlanta to parts up north. So cheer on that Atlanta franchise. Mm-hmm. Go Anson Carter. I'm with you on the number of teams front. Like, I really don't like the idea of there being an imbalance between the two conferences, which means they'd have to go to 36 at some point. And that seems like an absurd number of teams,
yeah,
but who knows? The two things I'll say to that is, one, obviously I've been long an advocate for them to expand the playoffs. It should happen now. We should have 10 teams from each conference. You can do play-in series. I know it's not a thing that everybody loves, but you got to remember that I'm old and I grew up at a time when like 16 out of 20 teams were making the playoffs and nobody really cared. And now that we have, you know, half the league sitting out during what is the most lucrative and attention-grabbing portion of the season, it kind of feels nonsensical to me. The other thing, too, about watering down the product, and, you know, there could be arguments all day about whether or not there is enough talent in the pipeline from NCAA, from juniors, from overseas to feed these teams and make for good hockey. You know, part of what's happened through the expansion effect with Seattle and Vegas is a little bit of watering down, which has led to record scoring in the league, lower save percentages. It's not the direct reason why we have those, but there is, if you talk to people around the league, a certain sense of maybe, you know, plucking one player here and there from teams having a deleterious effect to their overall defense. It might be one of the reasons why we've seen scoring spike. So to that end, if we have 34 teams, it gets a little bit more watered down. At worst, we might be looking at, you know, more high-scoring games, which quite frankly wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for the NHL.
What about relocating to Atlanta instead of creating a brand new franchise? Is that something that is realistic? You know, there's one franchise that doesn't really have a home right now that plays out of a university arena. Like, I don't know if it's just too simple to say that that could be, you know, fixing both problems at once. But, I mean, I've seen that floated around online at least today.
Yeah, I mean, so the thing about relocation that's tricky is that the folks that want these teams want the fresh start. They don't want any baggage. They don't want any contracts from the roster. They want the opportunity basically to do what Seattle and Vegas did with the expansion rules being as favorable as they are to teams that are just starting. You know, they want that to be their setup versus taking on another franchise's problems. And then you go to the NHL part of it. And of course they would rather teams pay hand over fist over $1 billion probably to gain entry into the league versus paying a franchise fee that could be significantly less than that if you're dealing with what is essentially a distressed asset now in the Arizona Coyotes. So both the league and these prospective owners probably would prefer the expansion route. And, you know, to speak to the Coyotes part of this, I mean, as was mentioned by Gary Bettman at the All-Star game, they're not done yet. There is yet another gambit that'll be playing out probably within the next week of a parcel of land that they're going to have the opportunity to bid on. I think you can expect to hear some concrete plans about what they would do with that land insofar as the mixed-use entertainment district. It could be pie in the sky. It could be a situation where, again, the hopes and dreams of this franchise to build an arena could evaporate. But, you know, Bettman's been kind of steadfast in saying until they don't have a plan, we're going to keep kind of supporting them. I do think that the sun's setting on that, but they still have the opportunity to try to do the arena thing just outside of Phoenix.
Yeah, when the sun eventually does set, I think Gary Bettman will be able to look at it and say, you know, we gave it our best shot because it's gone on a pretty long time here. Let's get to the on-ice product now. Matt Rempe. I mean, this kid has just taken over the league in terms of highlights and talking points. 10 games into his career, he's got suspended for 4 games after an elbow yesterday against the Devils, 5 minutes in a game, and he's suspended. Does the punishment fit the crime in this sense? Because this is a guy who's got 54 penalty minutes in 10 games, 4 fights. It doesn't seem like the most sustainable.
Couple black eyes.
Like, is this the best way to sort of get him to relax a little bit? Because while it's fun for the fans and it makes for some great online content, you start to maybe wonder about him and his health moving forward and whether it's truly sustainable to have a long NHL career.
Yeah, it's maybe a game longer than I thought they'd go. Most of the suspensions of this ilk were around 2 games this year. They double out to 4. You know, the Department of Player Safety will never confirm this, like on the record or off the record. But it does kind of feel like one of those, hey, chill out suspensions. And it certainly does feel like they did maybe not want him to be available for Sunday when the Rangers play the Islanders on St. Patrick's Day, which should be a pretty raucous place at MSG. So, again, that's just theorizing. they don't normally kind of calculate for that, but it is kind of coincidental that the suspension is that long. As far as them getting it right, I mean, I think he probably deserved at least three games for what he did to Siegenthaler last night. I was at the game. It was a nasty hit. I mean, when you're 6'7" and you're reaching to hit somebody, you know, you probably have some intent on that.
Yeah.
Rempe's argument in the hearing was that, like the way that Siegenthaler stopped sort of messed with his process on the hit. And he was also claiming that, he was trying to kind of brace himself for impact on the boards and the glass. Mm. I don't quite see it that way. I think he definitely whiffed on the hit and then rose, you know, chicken winging the guy. In which case the suspension is completely warranted and maybe even a little bit more emphatic than I think we thought we'd see for a first-time offender.
Speaking of suspensions and, I guess, drama, Tortorella, two-game suspension, $50,000 fine. It's his fourth suspension by the league. I thought it was really funny in the moment. I was enjoying the, I guess, the broadcast, just keeping the camera on him. Well, he went against the refs, but now, you know, obviously he's been punished for it. I wonder if this is a message being sent, if this is something that, you know, will be cracked down on more. Sheldon Keefe's often very fiery with the refs. We haven't seen something of this magnitude, but I wonder just your thoughts on Tortorella and the suspension and the hefty fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a signal sender, I think, by the league that they're not looking for coaches to behave in this manner. They're not looking for coaches to show up the referees. If you get kicked out of the game, you leave is kind of, I think, what they're probably indicating with the suspension. I wish we had a little bit more information. Tortorella spoke today. He pretty much shut down any questions about what happened. I mean, there has to have been something.
You're right.
To make Torts behave the way that he did. Something said, something done, maybe just too many penalties. There has been that theory about, you know, they're down 4-0, I think, at that point in the game. And maybe this is just the old baseball manager trick of, you know, going out and kicking dirt on the umpire's shoes and bumping him in the chest to try to get kicked out of the game and fire up your team. I don't know what it is. But, you know, he's been a guy that has been on better behavior in recent years. This is a real old Torts sort of move. So I wonder if there's a little bit more there, maybe even some history with Wes McCauley that we're not privy to, because this was really strange to say based on Tortorella's reputation and our podcast, The Drop. We did the top five most outrageous moments, and I could have made it a top 30.
Yeah.
But I mean, the guy has mellowed in recent years, and I was a little surprised to see him commit to the bit the way that he did.
Yeah, it was an odd one because on neither broadcast feed, you really saw much of anything that led to the game misconduct. That the Flyers were changing their goalies, and next thing you know, Wes McCauley's making the announcement that Tortorella's out of the game. So, yeah, he was upset at different parts of the game, but there wasn't really a sort of smoking gun in that sense that it would warrant him being kicked out of the game. So, in that sense, it was definitely strange. But nonetheless, Torts gets the suspension, and now here we sit. After the trade deadline, a lot of hate directed towards a team that we had just spoken about, the Vegas Golden Knights. Nothing they have done is against the rules, and I feel like we have to qualify that all of the time. Kelly McCrimmon has defended the moves, telling people to Google a lacerated spleen, which Mark Stone has, and see what that injury is like. Your view on what Vegas continues to be able to do at the trade deadline. Many hockey fans are upset at it, but again, they're not technically doing anything wrong, so can we fault them for it?
Well, they're not doing anything wrong. I mean, in the case of Stone, it seems like a legit, you know, injury. Last year, I think, was a little bit more specious with the idea that he could return for game one of the playoffs, but not game 82 of the season. And there's been a lot of discussion just around the NHL amongst the fans about, like, will the GMs end up doing anything about this? They meet next week in Florida. We expect there probably will be a topic of conversation about what the Golden Knights have done and what other teams like Tampa and Chicago have done with long-term injured reserve and the trade deadline. But ultimately, like, I can't imagine that these guys are going to act against it, because eventually they're going to have to use it. You know, when your team gets good and you get a high paying salaried roster, like, you may find yourself in that situation, advantageous or not. And have to use the same mechanism to try to improve your team. And why would you want to, you know, penalize yourself from doing that? And the other thing too is that I think if there is a change, if there is an area of focus And teams really are concerned about the way that a team like Vegas might be abusing it. It might be to try to figure out a more emphatic or maybe even independent investigation mechanism to make sure that these teams are doing everything that they're supposed to. Because the Golden Knights, you know, swear up and down last year that the NHL investigated them and found it did nothing wrong. Again, like Mark Stone, healthy enough to play in game one of the playoffs, not healthy enough to play in game 82, where his salary cap hit would have mattered. It's still going to kind of smell rotten for a lot of us. So I wonder if the league could come together with the GMs and the board of governors and maybe make sure that they do have some sort of independent verification that things are on the up and up for these guys, rather than, you know, trying to rewrite the rules for LTIR.
Yeah, I'm sure this is not the last of this discussion we'll be having. I'm pretty sure in Vegas you can hire anyone to be a doctor. So maybe they hired an actor or right. You know, someone that works the stage to come in and be a doctor. But we'll never know. But Vegas will be ready, I'm sure, to make a lengthy playoff run of magician. Greg, we appreciate your time tonight. Thanks so much. And we'll definitely chat soon.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN and The Drop. And tonight we got some big games on the network.
Fun.
Detroit, Buffalo, Vegas, Seattle. Those Vegas Golden Knights. As many
That's
as
so
them,
funny. They're playing tonight.
As many of them that are possible will be able to play. And you'll see the two latest expansion teams up at 10 p.m. on Sportsnet. And maybe they'll talk, I'm sure they will, on the broadcast about the Atlanta discussion. Anson Carter, of course, being one of the leaders of this ASC group that want to bring a team back to Atlanta, Georgia. I'm sure this story won't be going away. Lots of important meetings coming up with the NHL, and maybe we find more, but I don't know. Third time's the charm, but he was right. Both times, those teams ended up being Canadian hockey teams, Calgary and Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, yeah, we could take another one. Just make it in Quebec City or something, and I think we'd be happy.
Yeah, it definitely feels like if they go to 33, they have to go to at least 34.
Well, right. And then you're like, well, we might as well add two more.
Yeah. I mean, your chances, if you're Quebec City or anywhere else in Canada, of getting a team go up significantly if they go to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Like,
I would love to. I would mean, I think this is a fun text line question. So 590, 590, or Twitter, DM us. If you have a spot, like you get one team, doesn't matter about where in the world it is, where are you adding an expansion NHL team? Because I honestly think there's probably a lot of cities that really have the market, the infrastructure, the fan base that are hungry for a team. I don't know. I think Canada could get a couple more teams here.
Like a second team in Toronto?
I don't know if I love that. I'm yeah. sure it'd be fine.
I always wonder what...
I would love one on the East Coast.
Yeah,
I'm an East Coast
cool.
fan. Give me a Halifax team.
Love that.
Like, I think that'd be awesome.
I love that.
I mean, I'm not thinking logistics, money. Just where would you want to go watch a hockey team? Where do you think fans would want a hockey team? Don't tell me about their GDP or whatever.
Yeah, you don't like the business
team.
Conversation, which you
just
know.
The fun conversation, folks.
Yeah.
You can send this in.
Where is a team going to be supported by the people?
There you go.
Not just the businesses.
Send it in.
Although it's important.
590, 590. Yeah. Quickly, speaking of expansion, speaking of excitement for hockey, women's hockey just keeps breaking records, and they're probably going to do the same thing. PWHL taking over the Bell Center on April 20th. So we know a couple weeks ago, Scotiabank Arena had 19,285. I was one of those. I had so much fun there. Bell Center has a maximum capacity of 21,105. This is a rematch of the two teams, Montreal and Toronto, who are atop the league, both with 30 points. It's going to be awesome. It is going to be a couple weeks from now. So hopefully you can get out there and get your tickets. I'm pumped for it.
I watched Toronto and Montreal over the weekend. Mm. The physicality in that game was unbelievable.
Okay.
Like, there were four people in the box for each team multiple times.
Buddy, you'd
like,
get absolute rough
chaos
if you were
out
on
there.
That ice.
It was absolute chaos. I loved every single second of it. And
it's been a blast.
Hopefully that continues, because that part of it is fine. I mean, I wish there was more of that in the National Hockey League, but it seems like anytime someone hits someone now, it's like a suspension. So that's the way the NHL is going. I'm not sure why that is. Just, I mean, don't chicken wing people, but also we like physicality, and that game I thought was incredibly entertaining.
And I'm sure this one will be one of the last ones of the season, so it'll be a spicy one.
Amazing.
That is April 20th. We'll take a quick break. Kevin Barker's going to join us from Dunedin, talk about his former teammate, Joey Votto, who's a chance to make the big league roster with the Blue Jays, and a couple more things before we wrap up our show on the Fan Pregame.
covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We opened up a can of worms on the text line, where you'd want to have an expansion team. Some great ideas in there. We will sprinkle some of those out. But I don't think Dunedin is an answer that I've seen. We will be sending it to Dunedin shortly with Kevin Barker, but they've got enough teams down there in Florida.
They do. They you could argue, have too many.
I wish, I don't know if we're getting Kevin Barker by video or by phone. But we okay, so we're getting him by FaceTime. We were trying to make a bet. You were getting your hair done. What color polo Kevin Barker is going to wear? And I said something in the blue to teal. You have to make a quick bet.
I mean, it has to be blue.
What?
Blue
no, or he was gray. Wearing pink yesterday. I think he's feeling the spring vibe.
I'm going to go with gray.
Gray?
Like a gray Sportsnet polo.
We've got a blue from producer Mike. No, you said red. Gray. I got a dark blue from Andrew Holland. I'm going with like a nice tealy blue, and you're going gray.
Well, now we're doing shades of blue?
Yeah.
You can choose whatever
as specific
shade.
As we can
blue.
Get when Kevin Barker comes
okay,
on the
give
scene.
Give me gray or royal blue.
No, you get one option.
Okay, gray.
Okay. We know that he loves his polos. So anyway, we're waiting to get Kevin, but we're hearing today that Gausman threw a side session.
Yeah.
Looking like things are going okay. But things might be lining up, and Ben Nicholson-Smith has the latest article up on Sportsnet.ca that Barrios could possibly be in the cards to be the opening day starter. When all things lay out, the way you start looking at the schedule, we will see.
I wonder if they'll pull him before the fourth.
Okay, it's too early in the season for that negativity, Jesse. Let's bring in Kevin Barker, live from Dunedin. Barker, how's
it
going,
great.
Buddy?
That's
what
a great
color
shirt.
Is your shirt? We're making bets.
Oh, it's black.
Whoa, no, nobody went with black.
It doesn't look like that at all.
Are you mourning the loss of like a Blue Jays prospect here or someone not making the team? What's going on? Where's the colors?
It's got a little gray
okay.
in it.
All right, Jesse
yeah,
said
you
gray.
You can see a little of the gray there. So, yeah, it's not – it's look, I got to save some of my – you know, I can't break out all my good ones.
Well, you wore pink yesterday, and it looked great, and then inspired me to wear pink today. And I thought, we're getting spring colors in there, and then you're just back to black. It's fine.
Yeah, that's very cool.
You look good. How's Florida? I know you just went down there, like, last week or a couple of days before that, but things have been good?
Yeah, it's horrible. Like I don't know how I'm doing it. Like I'm not wearing long sleeve shirts and jackets. I don't know how I'm doing it. Yeah, I know you can't see my lower half, but I have on a pair of shorts and
flip flops,
tennis shoes. Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah. No, I don't wear flip flops because I have ugly toes.
Yeah, but I'm not a fan of flip flops.
I wear, you know, I'm wearing shorts, which is a beautiful thing. I've worn shorts and a nice collared shirt most of the time down here. Now in the mornings, it's been chilly, like it's been windy. I tell everybody this all the time, that Florida spring training, it's not the easiest thing to always do, but
yeah.
You know, it's this time of the year, we're fighting through it. You know, we're doing the best we can do here. It's a lot of fun, and for the most part, the Blue Jays are healthy enough, right? It's they're not. You know, too awfully hurt and on the shelf. There's some guys that are a little banged up, but other than that, it looks like, you know, they're all systems go and everything looks like it's raring and ready to go for the 28th.
Yeah, I mean, there's some guys fighting through some things just like you are, like Kevin Gausman trying to ramp back up. Like, what have you heard about his side session today? It seems like, by all accounts, it went okay, but what are you hearing being on the ground there?
Yeah, I think it was better than they thought it would be. You know, it's when you're a little older, sometimes you think you can do things a little earlier than you should be doing them. And I think that's sort of what happened with Gausman and, you know, maybe overthrowing it, maybe trying to throw the split finger, gripping it a little too hard, throwing it a little too, you know, trying to have it break a little bit sooner than he would like to have it break. But look, they seem to think that he'll be fine. I'm not sure he's going to be the opening day starter. You know, that sounds like it's lined up for Barrios, which is good. Look, Barrios has been damn near perfect. Like, he's been doing everything they want him to do. Looks like he's in better shape. You know, he wants to maintain the velocity consistently with all of his pitches, which I think the last couple of years he's had some issues with that. Looks like he's in a little bit better shape, capable of doing that. He's added the cutter, which is, you know, a nice little pitch. He's starting to execute it, which this time of the spring with these guys that are really good, this is about the time you start thinking less about mechanics and more about execution and setting guys up and getting in counts when you're supposed to strike guys out with certain pitches. You're doing that. I think he did that today. And this is sort of, you know, where they're at. Offensively, they look better than they looked last year to me. Alejandro Kirk looks better. Vladdy looks like he can pull the baseball. George Springer looks like he is pulling balls that he should be pulling, right? Not inside out and things, one-handed, trying to hit it the other way. No, I don't care about the shift. Like, this, for whatever reason, the shift got in George Springer's head. It makes no sense to me. It doesn't look like that's the thing now. So, and it looks like everything's all systems go. Again, they're healthy enough. Bullpen's good enough. Defense is good enough. Base running, they need still to clean those kind of things up. But that comes with the offense. They start hitting the way they're supposed to hit. They'll run the bases the way everybody wants to see them run the bases. So, you know, I think if you're a Jays fan, you hear the news with the Yankees, you know, Judge is having MRIs and Garrett Cole's going through elbow issues that he's going through. And it's good for the American League East, probably not good for baseball. I want to see all those dudes playing. But you take advantage of these things. You have better at bats. You pitch the way you're supposed to pitch. You run the bases the way you're supposed to do it. You catch the balls you're supposed to catch. Because you're talented, you probably win more games than you'll lose. And I think that's sort of where the Blue Jays are at right now.
I want to go back on something you just said, which was that the offense was looking better than last year. I mean, that's not the highest of bars, but one of the things that I know John Schneider really preached, I'm just saying, one of the things that we heard this offseason was internal development, internal improvement. And there were a lot of players that had room for internal improvement. And George Springer was one of them. Alejandro Kirk was one of them. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was one of them. And I think that's a lot of eggs to put in one basket to say that we're not going to, like, add too much. I mean, Justin Turner, maybe Joey Votto we'll get into, but you guys need to figure it out this year. You need to find a way to score more runs. Early signs from what you're saying is that maybe we're on the right path to seeing a bit more of an offensive outburst from these guys, and it could have just been seen as a blip year.
No, I don't think anything that happens for an entire year is a blip. Mm. I think sometimes you sort of are what you look like you are. I think if guys get back to stop trying to go outside the box, right? It's if I'm not a guy that can go the other way, backspin it, and hit home runs, why would I try and do that? Like, you know, George Springer tried to do things offensively last year that he's not capable of doing. Get back to pulling balls. That's where all the exit velocities and the damage is done to the pull side. Only thing that I've seen the last couple of games that I've been here up close and personal is he can actually do it, right? He gets a fastball in at some velocity. Everything's sort of geared up that way. His finish looks that way. Even the takes you see are, you know, it's a little quicker with the upper half would tell you that he's getting, you know, everything geared up. And I don't want to say cheating. That's the wrong word. But he's, I think, bought into, you know, sort of why everybody likes George Springer is – you're going to do damage. You're going to help this team leading off. You ain't going to do it by hitting 17 hoppers to right. Get it down and get it singing. It looks like he's capable of doing that. The Vladdy thing, look, we're going to talk about Vladdy to purple. And until we actually see this, you know, come to fruition, I just try to stay away from that. And he looks better. What that better looks like, you guys' guess is as good as mine. Like, he seems to tell us that he was injured last year. That's why, you know, the ball didn't come off the bat in the air to the pull side the way he wanted to do. Look, I've always said this. He's got too many parts. You got too many parts. You tend to cheat to get to certain pitches that you're not capable of doing because you have a lot of parts. Like, the timing of everything that it takes to get athletic and catch the ball out front, sometimes just flat, he doesn't. Is not able or consistently being able to do that early on. Well, look, you know, everybody walks to camp saying they're in the best shape they've ever been in. Who am I to disagree with that? Mm-hmm. He looks outstanding. He's like Alek Manoah. I got to be honest with you. I saw Alek Manoah for the first time yesterday. He walked by me. I had no idea it was him until I looked him in the face because, I mean, you talking sleek and aerodynamic, right? There it is. I mean, it's something. I'm serious. Like I said, if looks could kill, that's it right there. And it's only going to help him do things mechanically. He's the one guy, right? Is when conditioning starts to go the way you don't want it to go, you're not able to repeat things. It's the same thing with hitting, you know, the defensive side, running the bases. Like everything you do on a baseball field, you need to be in the best condition you can possibly be in. And when you're not able to repeat that. So, when I saw him, I was in awe. I mean, I got to be honest with you. Everything he did in the offseason and everything that I was asking coaches about, what's he trying to do and how's he supposed to look when he comes to spring, and they were all telling me, you're going to be shocked. You're going to be impressed. And, boy, they nailed it. Now, will this translate after he figures out whatever's going on with the arm? You know, he's throwing flat ground. You throw flat ground, and that's all you've been doing for a little while. You know, things are probably not looking in the right direction that you want them to look. But when it comes to conditioning and I think mindset, and when he did throw, you know, the outing didn't look great, but the velocity was there. They tend to be okay with the break on the slider, which is a thing. It's not floppy anymore. That's what it is, right? You want to get big league left-handed hitters out, the slider's got to be better. The sinker location's got to be better. They feel like when he's back and healthy and the shoulders the way it should be, that because of his conditioning and being able to repeat mechanics, he'll be able to throw the ball where he wants to throw it and help this team win a game. That's going to help, right? Because let's be honest, they got the oldest rotation in the American League East. It's just like their offense now, because if Joey Votto shows up, that's a 40-year-old that you add to your team. Now you're not only you've taken your oldest lineup in the American League East to a little bit of a different level, added to your rotation. So, you know, they need to be careful with some things, but they do have quality, right? It's older quality, but they do have quality. And if every one of those guys sort of live up to what they're supposed to live up to, they'll be in the mix. That's all we can ask them coming out of spring training, is to see a talented team be in the mix and force a front office to do things to help their team down the stretch. And everybody I talk to, now again, this is sometimes some people will say it's eyewash. Everybody says this is spring training, but it's quiet. It's quiet confidence. I like that. There's no more trailers, no more movie. I like that. Just be quiet. Go out there and show us what you can do. And I think they're trying to do that. And that's kind of nice. The Turners, the Bo Bichettes, you know, an older mental Bo Bichette is a big deal. Seems like George Springer sort of raised his hand and being one of the guys in the clubhouse, and adding Joey Votto is a big deal. That seemed to matter. It didn't matter when I played. I think if you weren't grown up, you weren't a big leaguer for very long. But this team seems to need a guy or guys that will stand up and yell at people if they need to be yelled at. And it seems like they found those dudes, and hopefully they get off to a good start. Schedule's not going to be easy. So it's going to take a village, not just a couple of people.
Do you think the veteran presence of Votto helps his chances of making the team? Because, you know, when you look at the roster and try and evaluate, what's this guy's path to making the major league team? Feels like it's either him or Daniel Vogelbach potentially at this point. Do you think the fact that Votto has been around for so long and can be a mentor to some of those younger guys, how much does that help his case to be on the big league roster?
Boy, I hope not. Like, I mean, that would be an easy answer to say. Again, you need all these clubhouse guys. You guys poking fun at the offense. They need dudes that can hit.
Agreed.
If that's a 40-year-old guy that you can give 250-plus at-bats to, and he can give you some big-time hits with the dudes or dudes standing at second and third base with two outs, then – that's what you want. I'm done with the – I've been in enough clubhouses. It's so rated. I understand that it just seems like this team needs that, at least the people that I've talked to, that they need sort of these guys. But you can have too many. I mean, how many guys can be the guys that have to stand up and say, you know, get your head out of your derriere and start swinging at a curveball? Well, what if I can't hit a curveball? Like, it's – you know, baseball works in different kind of ways. So I hope it's not so much what you're talking about, that, you know, he's making a team because he's a leader. Really? I don't care about being a leader. I want you to be a leader on the field. Be a leader when you walk to the plate. Be a tough out. Get a giant hit. You know, it's more for me about that kind of thing than it is what you're talking about. So, look, do you guys have any idea what the 40-year-old Joey Votto is going to give you? I have no idea.
No, like, I was hoping you would know. I played with him.
Well, I asked him when I saw him when I first got here, and I'm not sure he knows.
Yeah.
Like, he's a very confident person, which is a good thing, right? You need confidence when you're a little older in your abilities. And, you know, I've talked to coaches that have been around him the first couple of days at camp here. They seem to like the things he brings offensively when he walks to the plate, and the way he takes pitches and the way he can recognize pitches out of pitchers' hands. And I saw him in batting practice. Look, I mean, I don't want to be the guy, but he looked like a 40-year-old taking batting practice. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that sort of the thing, right? Obviously, it's his first couple of batting practices, and he's got nothing to prove. But, you know, I want to see the getting it down and getting it right. singing. I want to see back spinning to right center field. I think that's why they're bringing him here.
Yeah.
You know, he had 14 homers last year in, what, 65 games? Do that. If you do that, I think everybody will be happy. But it's baby steps. I think Vogelbach's done enough, at least early on here, to, you know, be the probably the left-hander that they take early and then give Joey wherever he goes. And I don't see Joey going to Buffalo in April. Do you guys? I mean, he's a future Hall of Famer. Why the heck would he go to Buffalo?
Yeah, the whole thing's bizarre.
I played in Buffalo in April. Nobody wants to play baseball in April in Buffalo. So I don't think you see that happening. So maybe stays here, he gets the at-bats he needs. And again, I have not asked anybody what the criteria is for him making the team. I have no idea. So I will ask that, and hopefully we see him in games sooner than later. And he's doing what everybody wants him to do, which is help the Blue Jays win a baseball game.
I've just got one more for you, Barker, before we let you go. Hit like a margarita bar or something. Ricky Tiedemann, obviously a lot of excitement around him, specifically now that we're hearing that there's a little bit of pitching questions. Have you seen Ricky Tiedemann? And if so, how's he looking? Or what are we most looking forward to seeing him when he does get an opportunity to pitch in front of Kevin Barker?
Yeah, appearance-wise, he looks like he should look. Like if you're making a molding a pitcher that's young, he should look exactly like Ricky Tiedemann. Like, he's strong. He's got a strong lower half. You know, he's a tall guy. He's left-handed. I mean, how many left-handies that can throw 98 like that can locate and just look appearance-wise the way he looks? But his bottom line is, can you stay on the field? Like, it's that's one thing. It's one thing to be the top prospect for the Blue Jays. It's another thing to pitch every 5 days. And until he actually learns how to do that, how do you take him serious? That's the thing. The stuff doesn't lie. I mean, Buck Martinez says this every time you see him pitches. Man, look at the stuff. It's coming out. It's hot and it's easy. And he's okay mechanically. Now, it's, you know, sometimes it's not free and easy. It's he's a kid. He knows he throws 98. Sometimes you got to let that thing eat and show off a little bit for the people sitting in the front row. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. But sooner or later, you guys know as well as anybody, it's about being on the field. Mm-hmm. And we just have not seen that enough. And until you actually see it, I mean, how really serious can you take Ricky Tiedemann? So appearance-wise, it's unbelievable. Stuff-wise, it's unbelievable. It's just that little part of it. So I think they're trying. Pete Walker, I've talked to him. I mean, he loves the stuff. Obviously, he loves the way he looks. It's just trying to figure out routines off the field to allow him to be pitching every 5 days. And if they get that, man, like just the lack of quality depth that they don't have at the minor leagues, and you got a dude that's left-handed that can do those kind of things – tweak some things, figure it out. I mean, they have a billion-dollar facility here with a bunch of people trying to help all these athletes out to keep them on the field. So hopefully they can do that. Fingers crossed. And we see Ricky. You know, again, who would you rather see, Mitch White or Ricky Tiedemann? I know what my answer is.
I think we agree with you.
Until Ricky can pitch every 5 days, I think you're probably going to see more Mitch White than you are Ricky, which is, you know, that's a little bit of a shame. So hopefully they figure it out. They can keep him on the field. And we see that guy throwing 98 with a big, giant curveball a lot, which would be a lot of fun.
All right, Barker, we'll let you go. Appreciate you checking in.
That was amazing.
Have a wonderful time in Florida. We're jealous, and we'll see you back here.
You guys enjoy the weather.
We will. You know what? It's actually 13 degrees and nice. Okay, someone cut the screen. I can't look at Barker anymore. See you, buddy. Kevin Barker from Dunedin. That background looks like something my dad would have on his laptop.
Yeah, well, he's not keeping tabs on Toronto weather, and nor should he be.
Yeah,
it's nice okay today. So
yeah, well, that was a nice scene he had there. We're 7 degrees. Dunedin's a bit nicer, but I love Barker. He's so
good. That was so much fun.
Yeah, that was great. Barker from Blair and Barker, I heard that they might have a special guest that they're interviewing in the next couple days.
Ooh,
so
intriguing.
Always listen to them. But I did hear somebody that we might have mentioned their name in the interview. How about we'll just leave it at that. Always listen to them, but you never know. All right, quickly, we have about 5 minutes left. Do you want to hear some of these expansion ideas?
Yes, love it.
Okay, because the fans are fired up about, okay, if there's 50 techs here, a majority... there's way more than 50. Whoa. Let's say there's 200.
Humble brag over here.
It's not my phone. No one's texting me, all right? We've got nothing. If there's 200 responses here on 590, 590, what do you think the most popular. You didn't look, did you?
No, I didn't look. No.
The overwhelmingly most popular suggestion. It's a Canadian market. What would it be?
Quebec City.
Saskatchewan. Yeah, baby. Confirmed? The Saskatchewan listeners are in full force because we've got 100 people saying Saskatchewan, Saskatchewan, Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan has probably the most junior A and WHL teams per
capita.
Why
do we never hear about
They love hockey. They love it. Saskatchewan, Saskatchewan. I want to watch an NHL team there. Getzlaff can be the owner. Regina, Saskatchewan, Saskatchewan. Like, woo, we might have unlocked a new expansion idea.
Okay, this
Get
is like...
Get me to Sask,
this is
baby.
Not, yeah, this is not... I don't think what I'm about to say is going to play very well in Saskatchewan, but do you think the issues with that we're seeing currently with Winnipeg and the association, I guess, with sort of like...
I'm not picking fights with anyone from Saskatchewan.
I'm trying to think of why Saskatchewan is never considered. And I wonder if you look at just the population size and the issues that are ongoing in Winnipeg, I wonder if that would be a concern. But if Saskatchewan is as popular as it is, I wonder why we don't hear about it as much. And maybe part of that is our fault for not bringing it up as much.
Well,
and
we will, we will about be the Saskatchewan fan base.
Let's start some sort of petition. That's it.
All right.
We need more Canadian teams.
Well, there you go. So Saskatchewan, the overwhelming favorite here in the text line. A lot of people loving my idea of Halifax. No problem. I'll help out. I can be, you know, whatever skate sharpener for you.
What are some other good ones?
Okay. So Hamilton gets a lot of responses. Obviously, there's a lot of excitement with Hamilton, Buffalo, you know, that whole Toronto trifecta there. I'm seeing Mexico City. I would say that they're going to play some games there one day, right? Did we talk about this? Austin Matthews was talking about that being an opportunity. I don't know if we'd have an expansion team there, but I did say, don't think about rules. London, England got a couple answers. Sudbury, of course, would love that. Joe Bowen would just, he would have the time of his life. Lots of Saskatchewan, as I said.
The London Anchorage, one's very interesting.
Anchorage. The response is, I bet 1% of NHLers have ever been to Alaska. I would love to go to Alaska.
What was that movie, Mystery Alaska?
And there you go. They basically already got
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Set up there. St. John's, Newfoundland's got an answer there. Victoria, BC. Quebec City has a lot, of course. Quebec has a lot of answers. But yeah, it seems like most people are saying Canadian teams, which I feel it. Like, get me some more Canadian teams in here. We get a better chance of winning Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I do wonder, and this concerns me a little bit, I do wonder if Bettman sees what's happening in different leagues. He looks at the NFL and looks at perhaps with the NBA's plans and says, well, rather than putting a team in Canada, another team in Canada, I'd prefer to try the international expansion route and go there. So maybe something like a London and obviously
well,
they'll play more games there in Europe. They'll play, well, outside of North America. And I feel like they'll, you know, play some more games over there and start to poke around whether some sort of European division or something would work for them. And I feel like for whatever reason, Bettman feels like he's tapped out in Canada. And that's why he's looking so closely at American cities. And now he's going back potentially to places like Atlanta, which I don't know. How many times are you going to try? Let's come
Maybe
back.
Maybe third time's a charm. Anyway, good attendance in the text line tonight. Apparently the Blues are once going to move to
love
Saskatchewan.
It.
We're getting a lot of Saskatchewan love tonight. This might be the most watched show in Saskatchewan today. So appreciate the viewership. Okay, let's do some quick best bets before we say goodnight and say goodbye to you until I go away next. My best bets, I'm going to Bunker's Dogs of the Day. My dog's name is Bunker, so this is his Dogs of the Day. The underdogs. I'm going with two. The Coyotes at plus. We just talked about expansion. The Coyotes might move, but Arizona plus 163 and Detroit plus 110. I'm seeing a lot of
parlay.
Well, you could parlay them if you're spicy, but I'm just giving you individuals. Coyotes playing the Wild. I like the Coyotes. Like, they're still clawing away. And then Detroit playing the Sabres. Detroit underdogs. Like, let's go. Those are my dogs of the day.
I'm going dogs of the day as well. My dogs. Name is Peanut. So instead of Bunker's Dogs of the Day, we'll go Peanut's Dogs of the Day. And I know the Rangers played last night and Matt Rempe is suspended now, but I still like the Rangers tonight because they're against Carolina. Anytime you can get the Rangers at plus 150.
Carolina, though.
They're good, but the Rangers plus 150. mean, that is value if I've ever seen it. And then I also took the Senators, who I know are a disaster, but they're up against the Penguins, and the vibes are just horrendous.
Honestly, both those teams need to win more than anything in their lives. So
Dogs of the day.
Well,
good luck to us.
Well, thanks for joining us, Jesse.
It was my absolute pleasure.
See you around, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm sure.
We'll have
immediately. I'll still be here after the show.
You never leave. Appreciate you filling in. Justin Cuthbert back tomorrow. That was the Fan pregame. Everybody have a great night. We'll talk then.